Well, good morning. It's good to be with you. I've been looking forward to this day, hoping that you also are looking forward to it. Does this need to be green? Does it need to be green? Now it's vibrating. It should be on. All right. I have to get used to everything. You all have to get used to me. I time my lessons, so we're starting right now. Now, you can come up and look at it after it's over, but if I forget to hit the stop button, it will show like we've been going for 55 minutes, and that's not, sometimes I forget to do that. But I like to know where I am, and sometimes I forget to look at that clock. But I've done that for a number of years, so I know exactly where I am. And I usually like to preach 30, 35 minutes, so maybe you've gotten used to that already. We've kind of had a situation that's been a lot different than normally how somebody moves, and I appreciate that. On your part, your patience. It's sometimes hard to get unleashed from a place that you've lived at. I lived there where I am now for 13 years. Have any of y'all tried to clean out a house after you've lived there for 13 years? I have hauled away, I think it's 7,000 or 8,000 pounds to the dump. They weigh me when I go out there, and you have to pay for it. And I have been so happy to get rid of that 8,000 pounds of stuff, thinking, why did I accumulate this? Those of you that are younger, just learn from us that are older. Don't buy it. You don't need it. You're going to throw it away eventually for sure. That's the only good thing about a move from one standpoint is getting to purge things. But thank you very much for being patient and letting us get here. Wilna will get here as soon as she can. We said June 1. It might be as late as June 15. She is a special ed teacher. Any of y'all that know special ed teachers know they have a mountain of paperwork at the end of the school year. Plus, she has to clean her room out. So that's a whole other project that I'll have to be a part of and help her get everything out of there. But we'll get her here as fast as we can. My thanks to Ross and to Nancy, too. I know that this would not have been possible if you hadn't had somebody that could fill in with the kind of skill that Ross possesses. There have been men in my life, Reggie Robarts is the name of another man, who did not do preaching, as we would say, in the full-time sense. But that, sometimes we think somehow that means they're, you know, on another tier. And that's not true at all. They are men that fulfill a role in the kingdom of God that is very, very vital. And Reggie did that a number of places in the Louisville, Kentucky area. He said, my temporary preaching stints sometimes went into 9 and 10 years, you know, because he would help a congregation out. But this could not have been possible without him, and I appreciate so much. I listened to his sermon last Sunday, and it made, and Wilna did too, it made us both very, very appreciative, very happy of the role that we have, the friendship that we've already developed, and the appreciation that I have for him. For Calvin and Jim, thank you for having confidence. We have bet the farm on each other, and we've bet everything, haven't we? I've decided that you are worthy of my casting my ballot to you, and you've decided I'm not a nut, and that you can stay with me too. And may that prove out to be a very profitable and very beneficial. There's nothing worse than congregations having to go through preacher changes that are not convivial and friendly. And you don't want that. I don't want that. It doesn't bless a place. It doesn't help a place. There's always folks leave, get mad, all those kinds of things. And we're going to talk some about that tonight. I'll get to that in a minute. By the way, I may go more than 35 this morning because I got this introduction I've got to do. But just to say thank you to you in so many ways, your kindnesses, and folks came and mowed our yard the other day. I said I need to borrow a lawnmower, and instead of that, they just came and mowed it, and I appreciate all you guys for doing that. When I first got here back in September, it was on Labor Day. We came up because that was when I was off from school and we could do that, and it wasn't until the end of September that we made the decision. We took the full 2 weeks that Calvin and Jim gave us to come to that conclusion, make sure that we were making the right move. Y'all were asking about me. I was asking about y'all because we had never encountered each other except from a distance. And I said to you in those opening comments that this a lot of times is like going out on one date and then saying, let's get married. And there's just a lot of truth to that, and we can't change that. I mean, it's sometimes you, unless you go with somebody that you've known, had a lot of confidence in the past, that doesn't happen very often because most time those guys are where they are and they want to stay, and so you can't get them. So we have to do the best we can, and I hope that we've both done that, and so we've committed to one another, and let's go forward from this point. Tonight's lesson, what I'm going to do, it's going to be like a Bible class, and I'll let the elders decide. I need to talk to y'all after about whether ladies can answer or not. But I want to treat it like a class where I could get responses from you because I want to ask you questions. And I want it to be a conversation. In fact, this may not be the first time I will, the only time I will do this. Maybe once ever so great in a while. There are other vital conversations I want us to have. And sometimes I feel like that when I preach, it is a one-sided conversation. And y'all are having to just listen to me. And so it really is beneficial when I can hear what you think about something. Right at the moment that I'm trying to develop my idea and express it to you, to have you either challenge that or say, you know, here's what I think. So it'll be a little different than you're normally used to. I'm going to loosen my tie. I probably won't even wear my coat. And I just want to walk back and forth in front of each section. And I may say to you, I want this section to answer. Somebody's got to answer out of this section or I'm not moving. And so what I've found out in Bible class is you have somebody in every section that speaks up. So we're okay. Somebody will help us out on that. So tonight, that's what we're going to talk about is what is the work of a preacher. And I'm going to give you a little background on my family, Will and Jonathan and me, and then talk about what it means to be a family. And those are concepts we're going to develop throughout the time that I will be preaching in the next few months. So again, thank you very much for the beginning. And thank you, Jim, for the welcome that you gave in the beginning. The football game was in the fourth quarter. The home team had the ball on the fourth down. They were on the 4-yard line, and they were winning by 2 points with seconds left on the clock. Timeout called. The coach told the quarterback, whatever you do, keep the ball on the ground. He knew how much he loved to pass, and he was good at it. No passing, no matter how wide open they get in the end zone. Run the clock out. The ball snapped, and who gets wide open in the end zone except the quarterback's favorite receiver? He was wide open. And so he throws the ball for what would have been the crowning lead, and it was intercepted. And down the sideline, the guy ran. No one could catch him until out of the blue, the quarterback comes running up from behind and tackles the guy out of nowhere. Before he can make the end zone, the game's over and the home team won. After the game, the two coaches were shaking hands. The opposing coach said, I don't know how your QB caught the fastest guy on both teams. The home coach said, I do. Said, your guy was running for a touchdown. My guy was running for his life. And so that's what I want to talk to you this morning about. We're all running for our lives. We get one shot at this. Maybe we go for 70, 80, or 90 years. But one day, folks, like all the people that have come before us in generation after generation and centuries after centuries of time, we will all die if time goes forward. James says this to us in James 4 and verse 14, yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. You guys over here, y'all don't even understand what a vapor you are. You're a vapor. Those big old muscles you're building up and all that exciting stuff you're doing. And you think life is just going to go on and on and on because I know y'all don't think this, but I was your age once. And I looked just like you. I had hair that was all the same color and lots of it my wife reminds me of. But I want to tell you, I've gone now 61 years. I'm way over here. And I am a lot closer to death than I am to you guys. And it begins to settle in on you very quickly, what James is saying. We are like a vapor that appears for a little bit of time and then vanishes away. So Moses wrote the Psalm chapter 90 and verse 12 and says, so teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom. And if we are wise, we'll look around and say, that's what's going to happen to me one day, and sooner than I think possible. We buried 2 years ago a deacon in our congregation who was 47 years old. He had a massive stroke, and he was getting better, and he slipped in the shower as the people were trying to help him, banged his head because he was taking the blood thinners. You know the rest of the story. He left a freshman in college, and two, one in high school, one in junior high, boys that are fine as they can be, but they are struggling with the loss of their dad. 47. How can you die at 47? And yet that's some of you in this audience. And I'm way beyond that. And if we are wise, we will do exactly what Moses said, and I will think about the most important questions in life. I will ask these questions. Where did I come from? Why am I here? What am I supposed to be as a human being? And where am I going? Because of all creatures and on this earth, we can think that there is a life beyond this world. And there is. And we need to ask it. In Matthew chapter 22 that was read in your hearing, verses 33 through 40 answer the question. So let's begin. Where did I come from? At one level, my grandparents on my paternal side were named Grover and Ada Durham. My parents are named Charles and Gloria. I'm Charles Jr., so I'm Chuck, and Dad goes by Charles. I was born in the same town that they were born in, Littlefield, Texas. I lived in so many houses I could tell you about. I graduated from high school. I'll show you where it is tonight as I talk about us a little bit. And I went to Texas Tech and got my degree in finance and decided to preach, because that's what all people do that get a degree in finance. They decide to preach. Is that all there is to me? That's not a very satisfying answer. That's not enough. I can contemplate things that are far greater than that. I can contemplate as you can. Is there a God? How did life begin on this? As Carl Sagan said, when Viking Ken, went to the edge of our solar system. Is it not Viking? Okay, he got the right one. I knew he would. I should have asked him before. It turned around and took a shot of the Earth. You remember Carl Sagan saying, a pale blue dot, just that fuzzy, but you could see it there. The only planet that has life in our solar system that we know anything. I mean, they try and discover. Do you know about SETI? I know, again, Ken. The search for extraterrestrial intelligence has been using radio telescopes to monitor for electromagnetic radiation, to pick up signs of transmissions from civilizations on other planets in the universe. Surely there are, because there is almost an infinite universe, there ought to be thousands of civilizations out there. And focus efforts have been going on since the 1980s. And nothing. Nothing has been heard. Why is it that life is only found on this planet? Well, there's two opposing viewpoints, two great opposing viewpoints. One is that we are utterly materialistic beings, that we ultimately come from a random collection of molecules of life that, as one man said, piggybacked on some crystals from other parts of the universe and came to this tiny world, maybe aboard asteroids, whatever, and deposited themselves. But if you take that viewpoint of life, then life ultimately has no eternal, ultimate meaning. We just evolve from lower forms of life. Will eventually Homo sapiens evolve into something different than we are now? And if life has no value, really, then power, lust, money, things, fun, they become the ultimate thing that we're to seek in this life. You know what that side just makes the case for? That side makes the case for Adolf Hitler or Mao Zedong or Joseph Stalin, or the current guy that is a dictator in Venezuela and all of his people suffering because, I mean, why not? Because ultimately that side says the fittest and the strongest survive. That's what the animal world operates on. So what difference should it make that human beings would kill other human beings because they deem them unfit to be a part of the race. Because your color is a different from my color of skin. I just made the argument for Nazism, for racism, for every other kind of ism. But the other side of that coin is that we are spiritual beings made by a great designer. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 7, the dust returns to the earth as it was, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. You remember the first Star Wars movie? I didn't know why May 4th was. I said, why is May 4th a Star Wars? And Jonathan was trying to tell my old brain, May 4th, may the force be with you. I thought, okay, I get it. You remember Yoda when he looked at Luke and he stuck his old green finger in his arm and he said, we're not made of this crude stuff. There's something far more to us. And even a movie like Star Wars and that kind of idea that doesn't even talk about a God still understands something fundamental. We are more than this crude stuff that we call our flesh. Infinitely more. I can contemplate beauty and colors and music and poems and goodness and kindness and the abstract concept of love and what that means. The design of our complex biosystem speaks of a designer. For people to deny that there could be that somehow matter who is mindless somehow randomly came up with something as complex as you and me is just mind-boggling, as we say. But there has to be a designer. In Psalms 19 and verse 1, the Scriptures say that. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims His handiwork. In Romans 1 and verse 19 and 20, He says, for His invisible attributes, namely His eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. In Hebrews 3 and verse 4, for every house is built by someone. Did this building just happen? Did it just randomly come about? Every house is built by someone, but the builder of all things is God. And so what the Scriptures would say to us then is as we think about this from that kind of level, we don't know yet what the Bible is. We're just thinking about life and saying these grand things that we need to think about. We are led to seek for Him, aren't we? And the Bible speaks of that in Hebrews 11 and verse 6. Without faith it is impossible to please Him, for whoever would draw near to God must believe that He exists and that He rewards those who seek Him. When he was preaching, Paul, at Mars Hill, and to those people that, much like what we're talking about in a world, as our world is today, pagan, and does not think about God, in Acts 17 verse 27, He said that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way toward Him and find Him. Yet He's actually not far from each one of us. He said, even your own poets have said, for we indeed are His offspring. And so you and I both know that we're thinking, we're going to seek. The second thing that we asked in that question was, then why am I here? What is my purpose to be while I live in this flesh? Well, at one level, I don't need to be a Christian to understand this. I must eat and drink and take care of this mortal flesh. If I abuse this body with drugs and alcohol, I'll pay a terrible price for that. I must work and make a living and support myself and my family. And many of you have come to the University of Arkansas to get a better education so that you can do that at a better level, that you can take care of yourself and your family. But in the end, is that all there is? Some of you are on the retirement side of things, and you did wonderful things in your careers. I talked to Ken Ledbetter about what he did, and other men fascinate me. And I'm anxious to do that and learn more about what he did. And others of you in this audience, it doesn't matter what you did. I love to talk to you about what you did in life, what you did before you were retired. But at the end of the day, if that's all there is, then we're going to say, just like the Apostle Paul, if the dead are not raised, if all of that is just make-believe fairy tale stuff, let us eat, drink, for tomorrow we die. And that's exactly what that other side says. And so do we just go from one job promotion to the next, seeking the accolades and the money that come along with it, maybe the power and the fame? Do we run our little piece of that gigantic puzzle and one day, like Solomon says, we give it all away to somebody else? And most likely, as he said, they are a fool and they'll end up that second, third generation and just waste it all. Do we move from our 20s into our 30s, marry, have a family, in our 40s and our 50s, we reach the top of our career path, and in our 50s and 60s, we retire and play for the rest of our days? How many? 15? 20? Maybe 25 years? And the whole time, you're going to try to stave off the ravages of time until finally you're taking so many pills you can fill up a shoebox. And you know what's coming. Is that all there is? Or am I designed for much, much more than that bleak picture? To find God and touch eternity. In Isaiah 43 and verse 7, he said, "Everyone who is called by my name, whom I created for my glory." That's what God says is our purpose. We were created for His glory. And we become a servant of that God that I said to you in the beginning, the two great commandments that He says in that beginning answer all these questions. The first great commandment is, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. He is saying God exists and we are to seek and find Him. And when we have touched eternity, our purpose is to serve Him with all of our heart and soul and mind. When we come together to do what we are doing this day, we are doing it so that we may honor Him. In Malachi, those people that were coming to the temple, he said, you are bringing the worst of your flocks and herds to offer to me. From the rising of the sun to the setting of it, my name will be great among the Gentiles, among the nations. You as Jews that I've brought forth from Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and you treat me worse, that all the Gentiles will learn. And in Malachi 1 and verse 14, cursed be the cheat who has a male in his flock and vows it, and yet sacrifices the Lord what is blemished. For I am a great king, says the Lord of hosts. So how much did we put into the plate today? Did it represent that we think about Him as that great king and that one who is worthy of all that we have? And we see as our purpose being only found in Him. And though this self is wasting away, 2 Corinthians 4:16, verse 18, we look to the things that are not seen, not the things that are seen. Thirdly, where am I going after I die? Well, again, there are two viewpoints. And one would say we are a vapor and dust and nothing. We appear for an infinitesimal second, a nano blip in the billions and billions of years that are claimed for the universe's existence. That pale blue dot in a vast life-killing universe. And we are forgotten in the blink of an eye. But a part of us yearns for more than that. And so the other side argues this, that we are eternal spiritual beings. That we will go on forever and ever. That life, if we understand it from that viewpoint, is full of meaning. Every action, every thought is molding and making me supposed to into someone worthy to live with Him in this afterworld. And God is hoping and watching and waiting and seeking us. Of Esau, it was said in Hebrews 12 and verse 16 that no one is be sexually immoral, he says to the Hebrews, or unholy like Esau. I like the New King James. It says profane. You know why we call cursing profanity? You ever thought about that? Profanity. Why do we say that? Because it is the Latin word, profanum. You may not be pronouncing it exactly right for anyone that knows Latin, but the pro means before, as you know, in our language, and the other word means the temple. So something that was profane meant that it was common. It was every day. It's like the threshold of a door. You just walk over it time and time again. You don't think about it just every day. But if something's holy, Now that's the temple. And therefore you're to treat it special. You're to remember who the great king is. You're to remember how he's to be approached, how he's to be honored. So that Esau would come up to that we ought to say Abraham, Isaac, Esau. We say Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Now Jacob wasn't much better critter at that point. But he had faith. And Esau said, "What good is it that I have this birthright if I'm starving?" And he sold it, as the Hebrew author said, for one bowl of stew. That tells you what kind of person he was. Is that you this morning? Are you, as one of our little widow ladies say back home, are you a oncer on Sunday? Let's just tick that off that list, man. We made it to church. That's all it takes. Don't tell me I have to be here again. See, I don't know you yet. Don't know who are the oncers. But ask yourself this question. Is that holy or unholy? Thank you. Is that treating him like he is the great king? To be honored above all things. Is your focus in your life, is something on Sunday night so much more fabulous and wonderful that I'd be there rather than here? Because folks, if we see the two viewpoints of life, where are we going? Where are we heading? Here, the Hebrew author says, for here we have no lasting city, but we seek the city that is to come. Is that what you're after? And do you have zeal for it? Do you have desire for it? Do you want it more than anything that beats in your breast? For here we have no lasting city. There's a man at home who fought successfully a cancer, and it's gone now. Do you know what he told me? He said, "I've been through that once, and I've taken those horrible chemicals to kill it and knock it away. But," he said, "if it comes back, I ain't doing that again. For here, I have no lasting city. We're just passing through. Pilgrims and strangers," the Scripture says, "in this life." And so when I look at what God wants me to do and what He wants you to do, the law and commandments give purpose and meaning to life, and we will answer for what we have done here below. As T.S. Eliot said, "This is no child's game, that in the end we all receive equally worthless prizes." Because that's what the other side does. They may be the most wealthy, fun, they go everywhere, vacations galore, they just enjoy life to its end, and they die. They die like all the rest. What then? What is beyond? What is the meaning of life? In Galatians 6, 7 and 8 he said, "Do not be deceived, God is not mocked, for whatever one sows, that will he reap. The one that sows of the flesh will of the flesh reap corruption. The one that sows of the Spirit will reap from the Spirit eternal life. For we must all appear," 2 Corinthians 5:10, "before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may receive what is due, what he's done in the body." So what am I supposed to do while I'm here? Well, that's the second great commandment. Not just love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, but love your neighbor as yourself. So tonight we're going to ask this question at one part, and I want you to be thinking about it this afternoon. Family. How do we create a really good family? Well, I'll give some answers now. You can come up with your own and give them back to me, please, tonight. We need to love each other deeply. Just think about a physical family. I don't want you to think about spiritual family yet. We'll make that jump. But just think about your physical family. How do you create a really good physical family? You love each other deeply. You serve and care for each other. You watch out for one another. You help and you teach and you guide. And you rebuke when necessary and you correct. And if necessary, you discipline more stoutly than the rebuke. So how do I have a good family? By any other means. It takes all of that, doesn't it? And tonight we'll talk about that. Out there are people we bump into every day. Neighbors on the street, co-workers, parents at school and ball games. Some are of little consequence to us. We say hello to them as we pass by. They say hello back. We may say thank you and please. We order a bagel and a coffee and forget to bring your money to Einstein Bagels. And they're so nice and say, let us pay for it. So that's my go to Einstein Bagels. We honk our horn at them, hopefully nicely. We rub shoulders with them in thousands of ways. But are the folks out there family? Are they family? Let me tell you how suddenly you become family. When we face the threat of a common enemy who can take away our lives and the things we value. When 9/11 happened and we watched, all of us did, that were alive. Do you realize, I was thinking about that the other day, and Emma, I guess you fall in that. You're going to college. Were you born in this century? You're the first to be born in this century. Guess what? The rest of y'all were born in the century I come from, so you're not as young as you think you are. I watched that day, as all of you did, when that flaming tower is the first thing to be put on the screen. And everybody's in a hubbub. And even the president and the vice president have to be hustled out, and nobody knows what's going on. And then all of a sudden, out of the corner of the screen of that TV, you see that other plane come, and it just slices into that building like a hot knife through butter, and it just explodes into flames. And then you watch both of them burn for several more minutes, and then one by one, they both crumble down. And thousands of people were killed that day. You know what happened day two? That commercial that showed the streets of houses, normal like any of ours that we live in. The next day, they all had United States flags flying from them. And we all said, we are all New Yorkers. And Democrats and Republicans forgot their junky junk that they squabble and fight about. And instantly, for a minute, we became the one. So here's a point. Why do we call each other brother and sister? And what do we mean by that? When I was in college, a young man across the dorm room from me, I was a resident assistant on the floor, RAs they were called in my day. And this boy would hear me. We had phones on the wall, and you took the receiver off, and mine at least had the punch buttons. I didn't have to do the, you know, have you ever seen that? Okay. And he would hear me on the phone talk to people, and I would say, brother so-and-so, yes, sister so-and-so, we'd love to eat with you on Sunday. And he was Roman Catholic, and he came across the aisle, and he said to me in my room, and you're not prepared for this, I've called people brother and sister all my life. And he looked at me and he said, Chuck, why do you call those people brother or sister? And I thought, well, beats me. I don't know. Let me think about it. And I've been thinking about it since I was 18. Why do we do it? Why do we call each other brother and sister? I want to go to Jackson's games and Avery's and Sloan's. I want to see Tater Slackett run for state. Is that his email address? I saw that the other day and I loved that. Tater Slackett. I want to go to Caroline's piano and her drama plays. I want to see Riley Davis play football. I want to see Cheney play soccer, volleyball, and basketball. Because if anybody can play all three of those, I want to see that. Riley, the same. Bryson, flag football and basketball. Kaylee, am I saying that right? I want to go to your piano concerts. And I want to see you do taekwondo. And Peyton, I wish you well in golf. And Jonathan Dooster, you threw out that baseball last night. I assume you play. Now, I didn't mean to leave anybody out, so you tell me afterward if I did. I tried to think about who all is the same age. You know what I'm saying to you is this. It takes a lot of time to build a family. And it means that you make this most important. Here's how Satan gets us. He knows that we won't go for committing adultery and we won't go for taking drugs and alcohol. We won't go for all of the other junk that the world does. But here's how he gets us. We get so blooming busy with the stuff of life that you can't say that's wrong, that we don't have time for each other. You don't want what happened to this church in the past to happen again. I don't want to have a group look at me and say, "You're fired," that happened. I don't want to lose confidence in the leadership of a congregation ever again. But all of that takes time and effort and work, and it is a daunting task. And I'm not going to do it very well, folks. But here's my commitment to you. You're going to see me at your kids' games and their piano recitals. And you're going to know that I care about you because you won't listen to me any other way. And I have been given, as we'll talk about tonight, a great responsibility. Well, that's the end of it. But I'm going to tell you, here's what Jesus says. On these two, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and your neighbor as yourself. Hang all the law and the prophets. Hang the Bible. So if you're subject to heaven's invitation this morning, if we can help you to do His will, He said, "He that believes and is baptized shall be saved." While together we stand and sing.